International sex tourism meets at the crossroads of Western privilege and third world poverty. The Western privilege is usually white male, and the third world poverty usually non-white female. These two meet, often on a sunny beach somewhere in the south. The lovely coast of Kenya is one such playground. Economic constraints and familial obligations, as well as a very limited set of economic alternatives, push local women to seek out tourists as the quickest, easiest route to upward social mobility. Dr. Rose Kezia Omondo, a lecturer in the Department of Marketing and Logistics at the School of Business and Management at Moi University in Eldoret, Kenya, has looked at the complexity of sex tourism.
The Kenyan coast is along the Indian Ocean. It's a long stripe of about 400 kilometers. The major towns, we have Mombasa and Malindi. We also have Lamu and Kilifi. So my study focuses mainly on Mombasa and on Malindi because these two towns are the major ones. And there are differences. That's why I focus on them. In Mombasa, we have all kinds of tourists. In Malindi, we basically have the Italians. In fact, it is called the small Italian town. So that's my focus. I think because of the beach, the sand, and the sea, and sun, it's more appropriate for sex than maybe other areas in Kenya. So that is the Kenyan coast where I focus my studies. Sex tourism is particularly evident in Kenya and also in other countries like the Gambia, Swaziland, and even South Africa. There is also emerging evidence that it is also taking place in other areas like Tanzania and the rest. Despite all this, we've not had major studies on sex tourism, basically because sex is something that people don't like talking about, and therefore even people in academics shied away from doing this research. My research was one of the major research work done on sex tourism phenomena in Kenya. I did this work in 2008 in terms of field research, and then in 2009 I did analyze that data and wrote my thesis. I found some very interesting information about sex tourism. It has been defined in the literature as that kind of tourism where tourists, basically from the developed or from the Western countries, would travel all the way to the third world countries to have good time with the women and men of those other countries. However, there has been contradiction of when it comes to this, because people say just sex would not make somebody pay heavy amount in terms of air ticket and travel all the way. So there has to be something more rather than just needing to have a good time. Because if they wanted that good time, they would still spend that kind of money and have it in their own countries. So there has been evidence, particularly also from my work, that maybe people travel to have romance with the people of different culture, because just like they would want to see how other cultures live, the kind of food they eat, and so on. So they would also like the kind of romance that they also can give. So it's about looking at different cultures, different things within different culture, and we cannot leave sex out. I focused on the women, and I also managed to talk to some tourists and ask them specifically what makes them travel all the way or what they like about the Kenyan women or African women. The evidence I found from the women's perspective is that they are doing this not because they are desperately looking for money from the tourists or what you'll call prostitution as such, but they are not into that. They are looking for tourists that they may, at the end of it, if they have a romance with them or they become partners, this will make them move to the developed countries and stay there and have a better life. Or they believe that most tourists are richer, maybe because of the exchange rate between the Kenyan money and the Western currencies, and therefore they believe these tourists can make their life better by maybe buying them urban houses for rental or for living. They also wish to drive cars and things like that, which is not possible with their status and with the Kenyan currency. So really for them, they are in this because they have certain dreams that they want to fulfill. And the other studies have put it like It is because these women are poor and therefore they are doing it as a source of income and living. Really, that is not a priority. However, what I may say that at the end of it, once they are in it, you know, they keep hoping tomorrow I'll get a rich one or a millionaire one. And then the hope keeps on for years and for years. And some of them retire without realizing that dream. As they keep on hoping, they really become desperate because they have no other work to do. They have no other source of income. So at the end, they end up prostituting themselves. But that is not what gets them in there. The other finding that I found is that these women are very cunning in a way. And as they try to engage into this kind of relationships, it's not about one man, one woman relationship. It's about the more of them you can have, the better. So they go on saying, oh, my mzungu means a tourist or a white person, mzungu wangu from Denmark or from France or from the Canada or from UK. And the more you can line them up, the better it looks for them. And they have a way of planning their arrival so well that they don't arrive at the same time. If they have one already in Kenya and they are entertaining that one and the other one is on the way coming, they would say, you know, you can't come right now. I am up country because my mom is very ill, so we'll have to plan this another time. And at that time, she's entertaining another tourist from another country. So when this one leaves, then she'll plan for another one to arrive. Now, there are many interesting stories because they really deceive, or the tourists kind of, I'll put this in quotes, kind of naive, and the women really can deceive them in different kinds of ways. And one for an example, a good example is where a tourist thought she found love, but really these women just fake their love. There is no love at all. So they just fake it and it looks like it's real, but it's never real. So this tourist thought he was in love and thought he was now can marry the lady. He went back to his country, sold his only house that he had, and put this money in the lady's account in Kenya. So when he arrived, the lady was able to meet him at the airport, but after 2 days, the lady disappeared. So at the end, he had to run to the police station because he had completely nothing. He had sold everything, anything that he ever had. So when he reached there, he fainted because he couldn't just imagine what was happening. So he was rushed to the hospital, and after he recovered, the police looked for the lady, found the lady, and brought the lady under. As they were trying to pressure the charges, the tourist again said, oh no, this is somebody alive, I don't want her to go to jail. So the police again was at like, now what do we do? So they just leave such cases, and such cases are many. What I'm trying to say here is the girls are very bright, they are very cunning, their education is very low, but they know how to deal with these tourists to their benefit. Now, one other surprising finding that I found is that sex tourism is not all bad news, at least when I take the stand of the stakeholders such as the hotel managers, you know, because they say it brings benefit to the women and that without sex tourism, the economy of the coastal towns of Kenya would not just be there, that they depended very much on that, of the circulation of the money that the tourists bring. According to many stakeholders, they are saying, we cannot ban this sex tourism. It's a good thing for the country. It's a good thing for the coastal region of Kenya. And therefore, let it stay the way it is. As for the women, I realized, I told them that, how can I get you out of this? Some of them were not so positive to get out of it. Some of them were tired, but since I know they would run back to that kind of activity, I said, if I'm going to help you get out of this, then you must leave this coastal town and go to other areas. Then you can start some income generating activities and so on and so forth. But then many of them told me point blank that, Rose, I'm not leaving this area because I've lived here the whole of my life. I cannot go and start life all over again in some area. If you are going to help us get out of this situation, you just have to help us here. So that is not possible, because the moment they would get a tourist, they would abandon this other income-generating activities and get to the tourists. Really, they had very difficult people to help, but maybe their children can be helped and not to follow suit in their mother's footsteps. So my thesis is entitled Romantic Entertainers at the Kenyan Coastal Towns, Hope, Deceit, and Risks. Because at the end, there are many risks. Some of them get sick, like from HIV/AIDS, but they have become very careful with that these days because there's so many of their colleagues die in the past, and therefore they would use protective measures such as condoms and the rest. So they are very careful with their sexual life.
Can you talk a little bit more about the downside for the women, the risks, the health risks? And also, what about their children, the education of their children?
The main health risk with these women is that they have a lot of psychological trauma. Yeah, some of them actually end up being insane I would use that term. Either because they also use a lot of drugs, because some of them, what they do, they don't approve of it, because some tourists ask for certain things that many of them do not like doing, and they can only do it under the influence of drugs or alcohol. So because they take that so much, it ruins their mental health. And the other health problem is just the HIV/AIDS, but this, I must say, the more mature ladies have become very careful, and they would not accept to engage with the tourists without condoms. And if sometimes the tourists may ask them to do that, and if that be the case, they would say, you must be the one who is sick because you don't know my status. Why are you asking me to get engaged without protective measures? So I must say that they have become very careful. The other risk that they face is that they become so vulnerable that their ability to do something else for a living is just compromised by the so-called easy life. I will put that in quotes, because they are used to almost like free money. So if you want them to do some work to get that money, it's not just so possible. Rehabilitating these people is not a very easy thing to do, but it can be done through a long-term process whereby they have to go through counseling, they have to go through training, and then I was suggesting that after that they have to be removed from these coastal towns to some other areas so that they don't relapse back to the same activities.
What kind of counseling services are available for these women to help them out of that situation?
At the moment, there are some NGOs that are trying to come in, but they are not so active. But such counseling activities can be organized, I think, real ones. Because what the NGOs are doing to me when I saw, they were not very significant. So if we can organize really proper counseling activities, or let's call it a rehabilitation program for about 3 years, counsel them, retrain them, like maybe hairdressing or something, and then give them money to start their income-generating activities, then they would leave this activity and probably get into that, but only again after removing them from the coastal towns, because they have become addicted to seeing the tourists, that the moment they see one, they would abandon that.
What about their relationships with their families? Because this would be frowned upon, wouldn't it?
Interesting observation there. You wouldn't believe it, but for many of the girls I ask them, are your parents aware you are doing this? Then, you know, they told me laughing that, you know, Rose, my parents, they know that I'm working in a tourist hotel. So many of them don't really let their parents know what they are doing at the coast. Oh, yeah, there's also another one thing that I may have to talk about, and that is, you know, getting a tourist, or what they term as a mzungu, is so important to these women, such that at the end of it, if they can't get it through ordinary means of developing a relationship in the, you know, as they try to look for them in the hotels or clubs or so, they end up seeking the help of supernatural powers. That is, they have to go to a witch doctor and to give them some charms that can help them confuse the tourists so that they can get into a relationship. And others also get into prayers. Others get into the use of spirits to intercede for them. And, you know, they believe in this thing so much that some of them have to travel all the way to other countries of Africa because they believe that these other countries have more stronger witchcraft than Kenya. So they will spend money doing that. And when they come back, interestingly, so even the tourist police officers that I talked with believe that there is some power in this. Because I kept on asking, do you really, really think there is some power in this to help these women achieve what they say? Then I remember one police officer said to me, what would you say, Rose, if this girl, for a moment, they were not together with the tourists, and then she traveled to Tanzania to get the charm from the witch doctor, and when she came back, within just a week, you see them together. What will you say? Although from my own analysis, I was thinking, just like the Maji Maji rebellion in which the African used a witch doctor, it only gives them psychological strength to press on much on this and to try harder believing because they think, well, with this I must get. And they just go out there and follow the tourists. Probably in the end they get one. But I don't believe very much in the powers of the witchcraft or the powers of the spirits as such.
But it's interesting to see how those traditional mechanisms would play out in this very, very modern sex trade, isn't it?
Maybe just to say that if somebody is more interested in getting more information about this, I am at the moment working on two papers that I hope I can publish by December. And apart from that, I'm going to write a non-academic book that would appeal to just everybody else that would just want to have some reading, just to understand what is happening at the Kenyan coast. And that, too, I hope should be out maybe by April next year. So I would be doing some academic work on it, and I will be doing this book. I don't have a website at the moment, but I'm going to develop one soon. My email address is easy. It's omondir@yahoo.com. That is read omondir@yahoo.com.
If you'd like to know more about Dr. Rose Kizio-Mondo's study, her paper, Gender and the Political Economy of Sex Tourism in Kenya, is available on the internet. Rose Kizio-Mondo also has a Facebook page. It should be noted that the same beach areas are also frequented by as many as 15,000 12 to 18-year-old girls who, according to a 2006 UNICEF report, are involved in casual sex for money. Emerging alongside this sex trade are elder white women tourists hoping for romantic encounters with young Kenyan men. Set against deep and deepening poverty, the sex trade on the Kenyan coast is a tragic return to a colonial past where white people were served, serviced and pampered by those they colonized. This is Rosemary Wally and Laura Yaris in Montreal.